But I just want to try and speak to you this morning. I want to talk about a guy called Joseph, okay? Joseph in the Bible. Now, there's three Josephs in the Bible. We sang about one, Joseph of Arimathea. And then there's Joseph in the New Testament who was married to Mary. Yes, thank God for her. I mean, what a woman, everybody. I'm sure she was incredible. I mean, she got with the whole plan straight away. But her husband, like all other husbands, it takes us a while. But God spoke to him. And this is the thing. The Joseph I'm going to speak about is the Joseph in the Old Testament. And we know him to be a dreamer. But actually, the Joseph in the New Testament, he had more dreams than the Joseph in the Old Testament. Did you ever know that? Every time he went to bed, he had a dream. I'm serious. I think he had four different dreams when God spoke to him. I mean, every night he would be going to Mary. Mary, I'm going to have an early night tonight. Because he was hoping he'd have another dream. But I'm going to talk about Joseph in the Old Testament. Let me put it this way. I got four kids, and I got my oldest now, Ben. He's 22 years old, just got engaged. I got Dan, who's 20 years old. And then I got my only girl in the world. Her name is Abigail. And Abigail means father's joy. Father's joy, everybody. Father's joy. And she's part of the Bayside Convent. And she's never met a man in her life apart from me. And the only reason I moved to America was so that I could buy a gun. That was it, everyone. That was it. And I'm not scared to use it again. And so that's Abigail. But then I've got Nathan. Nathan's the youngest. He's a missionary to the United States of America. And he's trying to introduce them to real football, everybody. Real football. Yeah. Oh, that girly stuff. Anyway, so Nathan's great. But Nathan, when he was about 7 years old, he was just sitting on the sofa one day, And just like on a night, he said, Dad, see, when I grow up, I'm not going to get married. And I said, wow. He said, I'm just going to stay peaceful. And I said, son, you mean you're going to stay single? He said, no, peaceful. I don't know what that says about my marriage, okay? But how many people would like a peaceful life? Anyone like a peaceful life? Come on. Well, you're in the wrong religion. No, listen to me. You got to get with this, everybody. If you're looking for peace, well, that's a place called heaven, all right? But if you're looking for peace on earth, you really have joined the wrong religion. There's other religions that maybe will help you get a bit more peace. But this is the reality. Jesus, before he died, he said these words, and it was like, Jesus, why did you say that? He said this the night before he died with his disciples. He said, you know what you're going to have in this world? In this world, you will have what? Why did he say that? I mean, like, why didn't he turn around and say, in this world you will have prosperity? Some crazy Bible teachers will tell you that. Or in this world you will have lots of peace and relaxation all the time. Or in this world you will have blessing. How many people would like that one? Yes. But he said, in this world you will have what? So if you are going through trouble, look at me, you're probably following Jesus really well. But he said this, be of good cheer. Or take heart, for he said, I have overcome this world. So in this world, there is going to be trouble. There's going to be trouble. He said, but I'm greater than this world, and I'm greater than the trouble that you're going through. And ultimately, I'm going to use that trouble in your life for the building of your character. Amen, everybody? I'm going to build that up in your life. You see, the Apostle Paul says this here in Romans chapter 5. He said, you know what? He said, you're going to go through suffering. But when you go through suffering, we know something that no one else knows. That we know that suffering leads to a thing called perseverance. Yes? And perseverance leads to a thing called what? Character. What's the one thing that we want our children to have in this world? Is what? Character. Parents, is that right? Do we want our kids to have character? No, I just want them to be a drug addict. No, you want them. Come on, everyone. You want your kids to have character. We want them to have character, but what is the one thing that we do with all of our time and energy? We try and protect them from what? Suffering. But the Apostle Paul says you got to go through suffering to develop patience and perseverance so that you get some character. Look at me, parents. Your kids need trouble. Your kids need some suffering in their life. Okay? Because that's how you built your wealth. That's how you created your business, because you suffered and you kept going. And because of that, you got character. And when you get character, you get a thing called hope. Do you see how it works? That's the way the Bible works. If you want to get hope in your life, you got to start with suffering. So we're going to talk about Joseph in the Bible. And Joseph, he starts out at 17. We're going to talk about this in a second. He starts out at 17 years old with a massive dream from God. And then it all goes south when his brothers turn on him. And then at 30 years old, God gives him a promotion. 13 years later, God gives him a promotion, and he becomes the second most powerful man in the world, everybody. From a guy whose life would look like it was just wrecked, he became the second most powerful man in the world. And then at 41 years old, he's reintroduced to the brothers that sold him off to be a slave. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, everybody. And then at about 43, we get to the passage. When he's 43 years old, we get to the passage that I'm going to read to you now, when he finally reveals himself to his brothers. Because his brothers didn't recognize him anymore, because he was nigh in Egypt. And the truth was that he spoke like an Egyptian. He looked like an Egyptian. And he walked... Sorry. It's really bad, everyone. This is a bad joke. It's a bad joke. But it works every time. And so they didn't recognize. How many people know, come on, in your middle ages, you don't look like what you were 17? I don't care how much you're working in the... It's like she said, look at her husband. Oh, yeah. I saw him get out of the shower this morning. I mean, it's like... I don't care how much you're working out. You are losing a battle with gravity, everybody. It's falling. It's all going south. It's all going south, all right? So they didn't recognize him, and this is when he reveals. Now, you're going to love this. Are you ready, everybody? Okay, if you don't have a Bible, you don't know anything about the Bible, here it is on the screen. So it says here in Genesis 45, then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers, like the big reveal, drum roll. And he wept, look at this, he wept so loudly. Isn't it good for men to show emotion? A couple of men said amen, okay? Come on, man. And he wept so loudly the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. If you've got a Bible, if you've got a digital one, highlight it, underline it, do whatever. This is so important, this little line. He said, I am Joseph. What's the first question he asked? Is my father still living? There is a whole psychological thing going on there, everybody. Boys need fathers. Middle-aged guys need a good relationship with their father. They want a good relationship with their father. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. How beautiful is that, everybody? Come close to me. And when they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. Oh my goodness, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Like every great preacher, I've got 3 points this morning. Are you ready for them? All right. Okay, 3 points. Point number one simply is this. He remembered who he was. He remembered who he was. He said, I'm Joseph. How do you live in this life with all the toxic atmosphere, with all the trouble? How do you live in this life and still keep your peace? How do you go through the trouble and not get tainted by it? How do you do it? Well, you got to remember who you are, everybody. He remembered who he was. He said, I am Joseph. So our first introduction to him was when he was 17 years old, Genesis chapter 37. He's just a young guy. And you know what? He's just pumped for life. Now, he came from a dysfunctional family. Is that good news, everybody? Look at me. We all come from a dysfunctional family. Yes? Or we're all making a dysfunctional family. One of the two. There are no perfect families. Are the Waltons here this morning? Anyone know what I'm talking about when I say the Waltons? Swiss Family Robinson, are you here today? No. I mean, we're all come from jacked up families and jacked up backgrounds. And why was his family dysfunctional? Because his father had a favorite, and his favorite was Joseph. Look at me, parents. It's okay to have a favorite. You just can't say who. It's Abigail. Okay. You can't do it. You just can't do it. It messes everybody up, and it messed up the equilibrium of the family at this time. So there was all of these 12 brothers, and Joseph was the favorite. And how did everyone know he was the favorite? Because his dad went to Armani and ordered him this technicolor dream coat, and he had this jazzy bling, bling, bling coat, and the brothers hated him. Now, notice this about the life of Joseph. His whole life is tied to his closet, as we say in America, or the wardrobe, okay? It's tied to his wardrobe, everything that he wore. And he starts out like with the jazzy Armani jacket. He's just blinging it everywhere, and his brothers hated him. And then he had these dreams, and he was like a little bit of a loud mouth, and he talked about his dreams too soon, and they despised him because of his dreams. So the story simply goes, okay, that one day the brothers are out in the field digging ditches. Digging ditches, and the father makes another stupid mistake. He says to him, you, one of the youngest, go out and check on your brothers. You that's just lying on the sofa, would you go out to the field and check that your brothers are working? Well, back up in Belfast, that just invites a beating right there. So he walks towards them, and they see him on the horizon. How did they recognize him? The coat. They recognize him with the coat. And they said this, here comes that dreamer. Now I'm just going to say here, what do people say when they see you coming? When your name comes up on the mobile phone, what do they say? Oh no, there's that Egypt. Send a voicemail. When they see you coming, like do they walk into the nearest shop or do they go, I'm going to see that guy? Listen to me. He was a bit young and naive, but I would rather be known as a dreamer than a dream killer. And let me tell you, in life, there's way more dream killers than there are dreamers. And if you've got a dream, listen to me, there's going to be people who are going to despise you. If you're going to be positive, you're going to be faith-filled. If you're actually going to stand for something in life, there's going to be a lot of people stand against you. So if you want to live out the dream of God, trust me, you're going to get opposition in life. If you want to stand out, okay, lots of people just want to blend in. They're going to try and drag you into their color of beige, everybody. But he had a technicolor dream coat. He had this bright jacket, and God wanted him to stand out. So they said this, let's kill him. Let's kill him. And then by the time he walked to them, they had downgraded it to let's human traffic him. Human trafficking is such a big issue in our world today. But Joseph was the first person that we know that was human trafficked in history. And he was human trafficked down into a place called Egypt. Now, notice this. The brothers get him, and they grab that coat. They grab the coat. They hit the coat. They rip it apart, and they put it into the blood of an animal, bring it back to the father, and said he was killed by a wild animal. They hated that. Listen to me. People, they can hate you, and they can take off the outward stuff and strip you of all of your stuff. But listen to me, if you stay right with God and keep your attitude right with God and remember who you are, people can never take the favor of the Father off your life. They can never do. They will hate you. They will hit the dislike. They will unfriend you. They'll put all types of stuff out there. Listen to me. They can take all your stuff, but if you keep your heart right and your eyes on Jesus, you're going to be okay. You are just going to be okay. So notice his wardrobe, everyone. He starts out with the Armani jacket, and then he's stripped down to the Calvin Klein boxer shorts. And if this were movies, the movie would be 12 Years a Slave. 12 Years a Slave, because he gets brought down into Cairo, down into Egypt, and he's in the meat market, everybody, and he's standing there, and think he's 17 years old. He's lean and he's mean, but he's nervous. And he's standing in a meat market, and everyone's talking a language he doesn't understand. He doesn't know what's going on, anybody. Can you see his vulnerability at this moment? And slaves in the ancient world, they weren't even human. They were just tools. The guy called Potiphar comes up and feels his calves and feels his thighs and looks at him and goes, I'll take it. Doesn't even call him a name. And I believe that Joseph stood there. He stood there. And he's in his boxer shorts. And they're calling him it. And he goes, I am Joseph. I am the son of Jacob. I am the grandson of Isaac. I am the great grandson of Abraham. I come from a line of faith and destiny. remembered who he was. The secret to life, everybody. The secret to a pure heart. To remember who you are. You're loved by God. You're called by God. Listen to me. If I'd have been walking here today, stepped out in front of a car, car's coming at me, and someone, Matt jumps in like a superhero, pushes me to the side, and he takes a hit by the car. Matt gets killed. I think I would maybe mention it in my sermon this morning. I almost died this morning, but a guy took a hit for me. He died for me. Would you ever tell the story? Everyone, tell your story. You were dying, but it wasn't any man. It was the Son of God. You are so valuable. It was heaven's best. Not Gabriel, not Michael, the angel. It was the Son of God, the darling of heaven, Jesus Christ, the best there ever was, died for you. Come on. Self-esteem issues start to get addressed at this moment in time. I remember who I am. I am a child of the living God, everyone. A child. Did you get that, everyone? I'm a child of the living. I've been adopted. Do you know there's been a lot of accidental births, accidental conceptions, but there's never been an accidental adoption. It's not like, you know, you went to Tesco's and came home with a baby. I said, darling, I don't know. I was just in the fruit and veg and just this baby came out. Like, whatever. It's ours. There's never been an accidental adoption. God chose you. He's called you. I am Joseph. So he gets taken down. I need to look at my time. What time am I meant to finish? Come on, what do we got to do? Okay. So Joseph, he's taken down into Egypt, and he gets a little robe. It's not as bling as the other one before. It's just a plain robe. And he just does his best, everyone. He just works hard. Look at me. I don't know what trouble you're in life, but listen to me. Do your best. When you're in the midst of it, work hard. Don't give up. Don't always be living your life just thinking when this happens, when that happens. Do the best with what you've got. Yes? Do the best with what you've got. And this is what it says, that with Joseph in the house, that guy Potiphar, he didn't concern himself about anything in the house or in the field. He was like, this kid's amazing. This kid is absolutely amazing. And you know what? Because he's here, I don't have to worry about this. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to go out on more business. I'm going to be able to, you know, get Ryanair flights and go over the border a little bit and go over to Iraq and Iran and just head around the local area and get a little bit more business. That's what he did. And then Joseph, this is where, like, the movie changes. We go from 12 years a slave, you ready, to 50 Shades of Grey. You know what I'm talking about? 40 shades of green or 50 shades of gray. 50 shades of gray. And Joseph is in the house, and this is what it says. He was ruddy and he was handsome. If you don't know what that means, look at me just right now. Okay, sorry. Sorry. That took a lot of faith on your part. And Joseph is in the house one day, and he's there with the Dyson. If you don't have a Dyson, it's God's will that you would have a Dyson. Best vacuum cleaner in the world. Bagless. He's in the house. He's got the vacuum cleaner. He's like, whoa. And Potiphar's wife, she's just lying on the chaise lounge. She's just lying there, and she's just watching the shopping channel, eating chocolates, nothing else to do. And she looks over and sees that young Joseph. I don't want to lead the sisters astray anymore. She looks at him and just goes, Potiphar has never vacuumed like that in his life. And she was a subtle girl. She was a subtle girl. She comes up with a nice, you know, sort of chat up line, just easy entry. She went, come to bed with me. She's a proper California cougar. She's bad. Come to bed with me. And do you know what Joseph's response should have been? Which one? Which bed? Do you know why? Because according to, like, modern Christianity, I have a dream. Oh, God spoke to me. Oh, the Lord has said. And then we get trouble. We get trouble. We forget what Jesus said. Because we think he suffered on the cross, we won't suffer. But Paul says, I want to know him, Philippians chapter 3. And I want to be part of the fellowship of his sufferings. I want to be fully embraced into who Christ is. I want to know that in my life. I want to know what it is, not because, you know, I just want to, you know, hit myself and beat myself, but I want to know what it is to really know Christ in my life. And we got this Christianity that when we say yes to God, we just think, I find God's will and it's going to be a breeze. It's not. It's difficult. 28 years in the one church working away. 42 years in the one marriage. Pray for Liz, everybody. No, but seriously, it's not easy, everybody. But we think because we say yes to God, there'll be this whimsical life that will just appear. It's tough and it's rough. And sometimes we tap out. We get to the front of a church, we fall on our knees and we say, God, use me. And within a year, we're going, I feel used. Well, what did you ask for? Look at me. What did you ask for? I was just in Skellig Michael Island, the most westerly point in Europe, 6th century church, monastic community, of where men turned around and said, we want to seek God. And this is the edge of the known world at that moment in time. And we want to claim it for God. And they give their lives. 35 years old was the max that they would live out there. Standing there this week, it was just like, God, help me to embrace the difficult times in life and realize you haven't left me, but you're with me in those moments. And we're going to go through. And what we do so often is that God hasn't come through, and you know what? I'll just cave in and just go for the next best thing, which is a fair or just living for this world. We get disappointed and we embrace destruction. And Joseph, she comes, and she probably was a good-looking girl. Come to bed with me. And he goes, I am Joseph, the son of Jacob, grandson of Isaac, great grandson of Abraham. I'm part of a great line of destiny and faith. And she's pursued him every day. Note his wardrobe, note his closet. One day, she was wild. She put the claws on him, ripped off the jacket, and cried, rape. Does anyone here want to really serve God? You know, we sign up for ministry. Not right, Matt. You sign up for ministry, and you just think to yourself, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to preach it. I'm going to pray. I'm going to, and people are going to love me, and they're going to flock into church, and they're going to like. And this is just going to be so cool. I'm doing this for God, and I've got the right reasons. And after this time, we're going to get a breakthrough, and the world's going to recognize me, and Brian Houston's going to call, and get a life, everyone. Work for God. And it's the private moments are more important than the public moments. You young people, look at me. He was 17, 18 years old. And he was away, and the whole world thought he was dead. His parents thought he was dead. His brothers considered him to be dead. It was like being at college, university, without a mobile phone. No find my friends. None of that. Yes. No stalking parents. Helicopter moms, drone dads, buzzing overhead, watching Abigail. You got to stand on your own 2 feet and look at me, younger people in this room. There has to be some point in your life where you just go, he is God and his rules are my rules regarding sexuality. I'm going to put God first and not my earthly passions. And you're going to have passions. I'm 48. It's not waning. Pray for my wife. 17, 18, you are, can we be real here, everyone? And he had an opportunity for sexual freedom and liberation. And he said, I am Joseph. I know who I am. I know who I am. Yes? He's taken off into prison. Oh, boom. Well, disaster. He's in prison. And one day, two guys come up. I've got to rush here. Two guys come up to him. And they said, hey, last night I had a dream. What? The movie's now Alcatraz. Last night I had a dream. We both had dreams. Do you know what I would have said if I was Joseph? You know what I would have said? Don't you dare talk to me about dreams. Don't you dare talk to me about dreams. Don't talk to me about dreams. I had a dream years ago. Look what happened to me. Now shut up. Slop out yourselves. Take a coffee. What does Joseph do? pull up a couple of seats and tell me about your dream. I'm going to ask you, the test of God is when you've had a dream, but you're going through a nightmare, can you still serve someone else's dream? When it's not working out for you, you're going to get tainted and bitter and toxic. You see, this is the whole secret. If you could take one thing away from this sermon, take this away. Are you ready for this here, everybody? The whole secret to Joseph's life was this, that he wouldn't let the outside get on the inside. But he constantly let the inside change the outside. Did you get that? He wouldn't let the outside get on the inside. Guard your heart, for it is what? The wellspring of life. But he constantly let the inside affect the outside. That's it. He remembered who he was. We got to fly. He remembered who he was. He was Joseph. But he remembered who they were. This is really key, everybody. Second point, that they were human. Look at this. This is kind of hilarious. He says this. And now, speaking to his brothers, do not be distressed. I would have said, be very distressed. Because you ripped me apart and you ripped me off and you sold me as a slave. You made my life hell. And I have the whole Egyptian army outside. You should be very distressed. And do not be angry with yourselves. I would have said, because I'm so angry with you. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. Really quickly, everybody. Can I give you some advice? Don't play the blame game. Because nobody wins the blame game. Nobody wins the blame game. There's no winners in it. It doesn't work. PJ said, I was born in Belfast, and I was born when the Troubles started. Anyone remember the Troubles? For a whole new generation, no idea. Thank God. But yeah, I was born when the Troubles started. And we've got a picture of Belfast. This is what it's kind of hard to see, but this is what it was like to get into Belfast. Just into the city center, you had security, two soldiers either side, note those large guns, big SLR rifle, and you would have to walk through, get frisked, like real top, you know, airport security, get your, for ladies, get your bags checked, and then the same thing would happen before you went into a store again, because Belfast was just getting blown up all of the time. We planted a church in Derry. One of the buildings we used in Derry was blown up, listen to this, 25 times in 23 years. Twice it was leveled, and the other times it was incendiary devices trying to burn the place down. It was absolute chaos. My father... Everyone just hold on. But my father had been a Royal Marine, came home from the Royal Marines, had served there for 9 years, had been a real lad and was the middleweight Navy boxing champion, and thought he would come back and serve his community. He was to be a police officer. Applied in 1968. The world was great in 1968. By the time he got accepted, things just weren't as good. But no one imagined 35 years. No one ever imagined that. So he signed up and he became a police officer, and 1977, the first day, January the 1st, people were hoping for a little bit of peace. 1976 in Belfast had been the worst year of the Troubles. It was the worst year ever. 1977, my father answers the front door. And that was always a scary thing in our house because now my father was a target. I'm not blaming anyone here, rights or wrongs. He was a target. He was seen as a target. So when he answered the front door, it was always a scary thing. At nighttime, he would always go, "Who's there?" He would stand to the side. Matt and I were talking about this earlier with 357 Magnum, hold it to the side. He would stand to the side in case someone shot through the front door. I was a kid. And when that happened at night, "Who's there?" It was the front door was here. If you went up the hallway, my bedroom door was here. The head of my bed was here. And so when I heard my dad go, "Who's there?" I would automatically, even if I was asleep, I would sit up because I was thinking they're going to shoot through the front door. It's going to go up the hall. It's going to hit me in the head. This one night, my dad said, "Who's there?" Worked out it was a neighbor, opened the front door. The neighbor said, "Derek, I think a boom." Our street blew up. This is the carnage that was left. It's a car bomb. This is a street. You can see the frost on it, January 2nd now. Windows smashed. Slates were off the roof. We lived just up there. This is where I learned to ride a bike, everybody, just up and down this street. A young family. They had also been warned, picked up their little 18-month-old boy, got in the car and tried to get away, and the shrapnel killed that little boy. My father was first police officer on the scene. I'm sure you can imagine the feelings, the emotions, the carnage. It wasn't the only bomb he experienced. Many times, bombs went off. Sometimes they went off prematurely. Even those that planted the bomb, they were caught up in it. This is what my dad says, PJ. I remember talking to him about it. He said, son, I've had colleagues die in my arms. I've had so-called, as they would have seen it, enemies die in my arms. But I spoke Jesus over both of them. I spoke Jesus. In our house, we were never allowed to utter a word of division, sectarianism. We were never allowed to speak of them and us. Never allowed to do it. See, my father understood this. Listen to me. You can't let the outside get on the inside. You can't do it. Can't do it, everybody. Joseph had a couple of kids down in Egypt. This is what it says. Genesis 41. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me to forget all my trouble. Wow. God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And verse 52, the second son he named Ephraim, and he said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. Why did he give them these names? I'm Benjamin, my firstborn, is son of my right hand. Dan, the Lord will judge. Abigail, father's joy. I mean, it's just names are really, really important, everybody. He called these boys, he gave them special names, and he said, Manasseh, what was he doing? He said this, every day he would shout, hey, Manasseh, hurry up, school's ready, the chariot's outside, grab your lunch, son. How many parents know what I'm talking about? It wasn't different in those days. Come on, sir, son, get the. What was he saying? Every day he would say, prophetically, the Lord has made me to forget. He would declare it every day of his life. The Lord has made me forget. And then he would shout, Ephraim, would you hurry up too, son? Quickly. You're always, get your coat. It's cold. Egyptian winter, grab it. It's cold. Hurry up, son. Get in. And then he would declare, doing that, the Lord has made me fruitful. And you know what? The order of these is so important, everybody. You can't have an Ephraim without having a Manasseh. And a lot of us are trying to be fruitful, but we've never been forgetful. And as soon as a little bit of fruit comes through in your life, if you've not learned to forgive and forget, the fruit's killed. And look at me, middle-aged people in this room. Come on, look at me. This is a middle-aged guy. Man in this room, middle-aged man in this room, look at me for a second. It's like in the evolution of spiritual man. How do you go from being a 17-year-old dreamer to being the grandfather that grandchildren want to come to and sit on the knee and say, Granda, Granda, Grandpa, tell me about your past. How do you go from like 17-year-old dreamer and become, excuse me, grumpy old git? So the choices we make in our middle ages are so important. Trust me with this. I do believe this. If the only book we had in the Bible was Genesis, we'd have it all. We'd have it all. Because it takes us through creation to fall, through the disaster of sin. Look at this here for a second. Massive theological issues going on here. Massive theological issues. The first question that was ever asked by the devil was, did God really say? It's the first question the devil ever asked. The first question humanity ever asked was, am I my brother's keeper? It's the first question we tried to get out of responsibility. Cain regarding Abel. That was the first question we ever asked God. Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? Do you know what? Joseph was the one who stepped up and said, yes, I am. Because Cain and Abel, first family, they killed each other. Does that encourage you today? They killed each other. And then brothers just fought all the time. Ishmael and Isaac, even the sons of Noah, they fought about Noah because he got Irish drunk, naked drunk, everybody. There's Isaac and Ishmael fought, Jacob and Esau fought. They were fighting in the womb. And then here we got Joseph and his brothers are fighting. And what should have happened here at the end of Genesis, there should have been a bloodbath and Joseph should have taken his revenge and killed his brothers and wiped them all out. But we see Jesus and Joseph and he said, come close. Come close. I am my brother's keeper. And where you drop the ball, boys, I'm going to keep it because I am Joseph. We've got to finish. He remembered who God is. He said this, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by what? A great deliverance. Boom. Just boom, everybody. Yes? Yeah. Incredible. It's just incredible. He said, don't you worry about it. God's in charge. I've kept my heart pure. I want you to look at this. If I had the power of God, I would change my circumstances. But if I had the wisdom of God, I wouldn't do it. If I had the power of God, I would be driving a Ferrari today. Yes? If I had the power of God, I would be playing the lotto and winning it tonight. And if I had the power of God, some people would be fried. No, they would be slow roasted. Are you with me? But I don't need the power of God. I need the wisdom of God. I need the wisdom of God. So I believe that you know Danny Guglielmucci. Friend of ours, Danny Guglielmucci. Say Guglielmucci 3 times, you're speaking in tongues. You're there, halfway there. It's a great start. And Danny had a son called Chris. 4 years ago, he's working for God, not in Danny's church, another church in Adelaide, Australia. It's January. Down there, it's summer, January. High school pastor, he's taking all the kids away. Oh, boom, boom. It's really good. Sorry, turn that off for a second, but keep that, sorry, because you need punchline. And Chris, the son, high school pastor, working with the kids, and they're all out playing, and he notices storm clouds coming in. He thinks there's going to be a bit of rain in that. Goes out to call them all in, and he's struck dead by a bolt of lightning. 39 years old, 4 children. What? In the insurance building business, that's called an act of. You can't go. He should have been wearing a helmet, a high vis jacket. Come on, let's be honest. You can't go accident. You just go, what? Have you ever had one of those moments in your life? Maybe not as extreme, but you just go, God, why? I was serving you, I was loving you, I was doing my best, I was keeping myself pure. I hadn't looked at porn in weeks, and I was just doing my best. I'm tithing, I'm just loving you, God, I'm just doing my best, and boom, you do that. And I remember going to text Danny and just go, what? Have you ever written one of those texts 40 times and you keep deleting it because it just looks stupid every time? On the day of Chris's funeral, Danny, he tweeted this. This is what he tweeted. As our beautiful son Chris has left us for heaven, I'm found practicing what I've preached. Trust sovereignty when there is no clarity. That doesn't make me a Calvinist. That makes me a Christian. Are you with me, everybody? It makes me a Christian. Anyone in here, you don't have clarity? There's a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know what's going on. But I have a God who is good. Yes? Not that he is just acting in an arbitrary way without, you know, with impunity. He's a good God and he's a great God. And my one job in life is to keep the outside from getting on. on the inside. It doesn't mean I won't cry tears. It doesn't mean I won't have questions. It doesn't mean that I won't put my questions on the why shelf and look at them every now and then. But I have a good God, and I trust sovereignty when there is no clarity.